A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really getting into a book that, well, it didn't just analyze globalization, it arguably defined it for the early 21st century.
That's right. We're talking about Thomas Friedman's huge book, The World is Flat, A Brief History of the 21st Century.
Became a bestseller almost overnight, didn't it?
It really did. And our goal today, well, it's pretty straightforward. We want to pull out the core idea, Friedman's whole thesis, that technology and history kind of converge to level the global economic playing field.
And you know, you might be thinking, okay, this book's almost 20 years old. Why does it still matter now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because these forces he talks about, they're still shaping things. This whole flattening idea, it changes how you think about your career, who you're actually competing with.
Yeah, and maybe more importantly, how you as one person can actually connect and compete on this like massive global stage.
Exactly. If you're trying to figure out your place in the modern economy, you kind of need to get your head around this stuff.
Absolutely. And to get the book, you really need to understand the author, Thomas Friedman. He's uniquely positioned for this kind of analysis.
Three-time Pulitzer winner, right? Longtime foreign affairs columnist for the New York Times.
Precisely. He has that authority. But what makes his view really distinctive, I think, isn't just the analysis from afar.
No, he's famous for his on-the-ground reporting, isn't he? He doesn't just crunch numbers.
Exactly. He builds his arguments by actually talking to people. CEOs in Silicon Valley, sure. But also factory workers in China, call center agents in Bangalore.
Right. He sees the big picture by looking at all these individual pieces, these micro interactions.
Yeah, he synthesizes these huge trends from the ground up. And this wasn't his first look at globalization either.
Ah, right. The Lexus and the olive tree. That was about the tension, wasn't it, between global markets and, like, local culture.
Mm-hmm. That was the earlier framework. The World is Flat is kind of the next chapter, arguing how technology maybe started to resolve that tension, creating this single competitive space.
Okay, so let's nail down that core argument. The world is flat.
Mm-hmm.
What does he actually mean by that?
Well, fundamentally, it means that things like geographical distance, political borders, even time zones,
mm-hmm.
they're not the defining competitive advantages they used to be.
Technology has sort of eroded them?
Mitigated them, yeah. Largely. And this flattening, this is what he calls globalization 3.0.
Okay, so there was a 1.0 and a 2.0.
Right. Globalization 1.0, think centuries ago, driven by countries, Columbus, empires, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Globalization 2.0 is more recent, driven by big multinational corporations expanding overseas. Think Ford, IBM, setting up global operations.
Got it. So what makes 3.0 so different?
The key player changes. It's not countries or corporations anymore. It's the individual.
The empowered individual.
Exactly. Because the tools, you know, high-speed internet software, global communication tools that used to belong only to huge organizations,
are now on everyone's desk.
Pretty much. A single person with a laptop and an internet connection can access a global market, global information, global collaborators.
So the book is kind of a wake-up call then.
Hmm.
And maybe a roadmap.
I think so. It's telling readers, look, the person starting a business that competes with yours might be halfway around the world. You need to understand this new landscape.
It forces you to rethink all those old assumptions about, well, where things have to happen. Economic geography, basically.
And the whole idea crystallized for Friedman during a specific trip, right? To Infosys in Bangalore, India.
Yeah, that's the story he tells. He was just blown away seeing really high-level work complex, accounting, software design, even reading medical scans being done seamlessly there.
Work that previously you'd assume had to be done in, say, the U.S. or Europe.
Right. He realized the capability wasn't just there, it was thriving. That was his aha moment. The world is flat.
And from that realization, he started identifying the forces that made it flat. The 10 flatteners.
These 10 specific events or trends that, when they came together, created the platform for this globalization 3.0.
Exactly. And it's worth looking at a few specific examples because they show the range political, technological, business changes.
Okay, where should we start?
Well, flattener number one is the fall of the Berlin Wall, November 9th, 1989.
Which wasn't just symbolic, right?
Not at all. Suddenly, you had millions of people, millions of minds from Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union joining the global free market. Huge influx of talent and ambition.
Doubled the available talent pool almost overnight, he argues.
Pretty much. Then you get a key technological trigger. Flattener number two. Netscape going public in August 95.
Ah, the browser wars.
Yeah.
Made the internet graphical usable for everyone, not just academics.
Right. And crucially, it sparked this massive investment boom. Billions poured into laying fiber optic cables around the world,
creating the actual physical network for all this global collaboration.
The pipes.
Exactly. The pipes. Then let's jump to the business side. Flattener number five, outsourcing. Okay, this one feels familiar. Started as cost saving, right? Moving manufacturing, then call centers.
It did, but it really accelerated, maybe ironically, because of the Y2K bug scare.
How so?
While Western companies were desperate for programmers, they had to trust teams in places like India with critical coding work. And guess what? They delivered.
Ah, so that built trust and proved capability.
Massively. And it helped outsourcing evolve quickly from, you know, basic tasks to really high-skill knowledge work. Like he mentions, India radiologists reading x-rays for American hospitals.
Wow. Okay, one more.
Let's do flattener number nine, informing, which is basically Google, search engines.
The ability for anyone to find information instantly.
Right. It completely democratized access to knowledge. You don't necessarily need the expert librarian or the expensive consultant anymore. You can become your own researcher instantly. It leveled the information playing field.
Okay, so those are some of the forces. But Friedman says it wasn't just the forces themselves, right? It was how they came together.
Exactly. This is crucial. He calls it the triple convergence, happening around the year 2000. The flatteners alone weren't enough.
Right. It needed something more. A perfect storm, almost. What was the first part of the convergence?
Convergence one. All 10 flatteners basically matured and started working together seamlessly. The PCs, the fiber optics, the software standards, outsourcing models, they all clicked into place, creating this single, relatively friction-free global platform.
Okay. The platform emerged. What's convergence two?
Businesses everywhere started to recognize this new platform and fundamentally change how they operated to take advantage of it.
This is where that horizontal thinking comes in.
Yes. Can you break that down a bit? What does that look like practically?
Okay, so think about ditching the old rigid pyramid structure.
Mm.
You know, CEO at the top, orders flow down.
Right.
Instead, companies started building these seamless horizontal connections. Friedman used examples like, say, a big clothing retailer. The design team in Italy is collaborating in real time with fabric suppliers in China, who are coordinating instantly with factories in Vietnam, who are linked up with logistics experts in Singapore.
Wow. So sales, R&D, manufacturing, they're all talking directly to each other across continents constantly.
Exactly. Horizontally, not up and down the chain of command.
Okay. Platform emerges, businesses adapt. What's convergence three? This one sounds like the real game changer.
It was huge. This was the moment when literally billions of new workers entered the global labor pool. Billions. From where?
Primarily from China, India, and the countries of the former Soviet bloc. These populations became accessible to the global economy right when the platform, convergence arrest,
yeah,
and the new business processes, convergence the second, were ready for them.
So put those three together, the platform, the new ways of working, and billions of new motivated workers.
And you get a fundamentally different world, a truly globalized, interconnected, and intensely competitive marketplace.
And the result of all this convergence is what he calls the great sorting out.
Sounds ominous.
Well, it means this massive new wave of competition forces companies, especially in the developed world, to become incredibly efficient, flexible, global, or risk getting left behind.
So a painful adjustment period.
Definitely. Reevaluating everything. Which leads directly to one of the big warnings in the book, particularly for countries like the U.S., the quiet crisis.
Explain that.
Friedman argues that developed nations, particularly the U.S., were becoming complacent about their lead in science, technology, engineering, math, STEM fields.
Assuming they'd always be ahead.
Kind of. But while they were maybe resting on their laurels, countries like China and India were massively ramping up their output of highly skilled science and engineering graduates.
Ah, so if the playing field is flat and you're not training enough top players,
you start losing your competitive edge. Slowly, maybe, but dangerously. That's the quiet crisis. Educational complacency leading to a potential decline in innovation leadership.
Okay, so if we pull back and look at the big picture messages here, what are the core takeaways for someone listening today?
Well, first, and this is really the heart of it, globalization 3.0 means the empowerment of the individual.
The barrier to entry for global competition and collaboration is just lower than it's ever been.
Right. So the question for you listening is pretty direct. How are you using this platform? Are you tapping into global knowledge, global markets, global talent pools?
Which connects directly to the second big theme. Adaptability is the new job security.
Because if tasks can be outsourced easily or automated by software,
then the only real security comes from your ability to learn, adapt, and acquire new skills constantly. Lifelong learning isn't a buzzword. It's basically the requirement.
Makes sense. Old models of just memorizing stuff in school are kind of obsolete if information is everywhere.
Exactly. And the third theme follows from that. The increasing importance of collaboration.
In a flat world, you can't just operate in a silo.
No way. Think about open source software or those complex global supply chains we mentioned. Success depends on working effectively with diverse groups of people, often across cultures, languages, time zones.
So being able to collaborate well, especially across those boundaries, becomes a really valuable skill in itself.
Definitely. And Friedman was brilliant at coining these sticky phrases that capture these huge ideas.
Yeah, he really was. Like the first one, which speaks right to that individual empowerment. In a flat world, you can innovate without having to emigrate.
That's huge, isn't it? The idea that talent doesn't necessarily have to leave home to find opportunity anymore.
Right. You can connect to the global platform from anywhere, theoretically. It could help stop that brain drain from developing countries.
Then there's the one that highlights informing. The new saying is, Google, I have a problem.
Huh. Yeah, sums it up perfectly. Forget the old gatekeepers. Information access is radically democratized.
And maybe the most powerful one for thinking about skills and careers is his formula. CQ, curiosity quotient, plus PQ, passion quotient, IQ. Intelligence quotient.
Ooh, I like that. Explain that.
Well, if basic knowledge, IQ, is easily accessible, like a commodity,
then what really sets you apart is your curiosity, your drive to ask new questions, explore, figure things out,
yeah.
Your CQ.
And your passion, the energy and perseverance to pursue those questions and execute on new ideas, your PQ.
So creativity, curiosity, passion. Those become more valuable than just knowing facts.
In this flat world model?
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the argument.
Okay, so how do we actually apply this? Thinking about careers, personal development.
Well, Friedman talks about striving to become what he calls an untouchable.
Sounds dramatic. What is it?
It means developing skills that are really hard to outsource or automate. Things that require unique, complex human interaction, deep creativity, or very specialized, localized knowledge.
Okay, so like a highly specialized surgeon.
Yeah.
Or a master plumber who can diagnose really tricky problems in person. Or maybe someone who combines different disciplines in a creative way.
Exactly. Jobs that need that complex human element or deep local context or true originality. And a practical tip building on that,
yeah,
is to actively work on your cultural competency. Don't just stick to your own bubble.
Seek out chances to work with people from different backgrounds, build global networks.
Yes. Position yourself as someone who can bridge those cultural gaps.
Mm.
Be the translator, the connector between that team in Italy and the team in Vietnam. That's incredibly valuable.
That makes a lot of sense. And what about the bigger picture? Policy, even geopolitics.
Well, he introduces a fascinating, maybe controversial idea, the Dell theory of conflict prevention.
The Dell theory, like the computer company.
Yeah. His idea is that countries that are deeply woven into major global supply chains, like Dell's massive, intricate network, but could be Apple's or Toyota's too, are much less likely to go to war with each other.
Why? Because it would wreck their economies.
Precisely. The economic pain of disrupting those interdependent supply chains would just be too high for everyone involved. So economic integration becomes a powerful force for peace, at least between those integrated countries.
Hmm. Interesting. But I guess the question is, does that apply to countries outside those major chains or to actors who don't care about economic consequences? That's the critical caveat. Absolutely. It's not a guarantee against all conflict. But he argues it creates strong incentives for peace among the major players locked into that system. It promotes stability through shared economic stakes.
Okay, so wrapping up, what's the single biggest takeaway from diving back into the world is flat?
For me, it's that this shift, this flattening driven by technology and convergence, it's fundamental. It's not temporary. And success in this environment, whether for an individual, a company, or even a country, it really hinges on adaptability.
You can't rely on old advantages.
No. The flat world is a platform. It offers incredible empowerment. But what happens on that platform depends entirely on how prepared we are, how willing we are to learn, adapt, and collaborate.
And that leads right into Friedman's final, quite provocative point, doesn't it? The double-edged nature of this whole thing.
Oh, yes. The duality.
He points out that the same platform, the same flatteners that empower entrepreneurs and innovators,
can also empower darker forces like terrorist networks. He specifically mentions Al-Qaeda operating like a kind of virtual evil multinational using the same tools of communication and decentralization.
So the challenge for us is huge. How do we harness all this amazing potential for connection and collaboration for good?
While also figuring out how to manage the risks, the volatility, the potential for misuse that comes with this hyper-connected, friction-free world.
It really is the ultimate balancing act, isn't it? And one we're still very much wrestling with today.
A profound challenge indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.